Equities are trying to hold on to early strength, but the reversal in energy prices to the downside is making it tough for the optimism in stocks to make the move over to the ag commodities today. We're talking crop conditions and unveiling some exciting news on this week's Farmer Forum.
Live from beneath the cloak of thinly veiled exuberance via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with a conversation with field agronomist Ken Ferry. Then it's our Farmer Forum with panelists Glenn Newcomer and Ben Renshie. And right after the news, we'll get an update from Margie Eckelkamp from AgPro Magazine. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson.
David.
And now, the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis Michelson, thank you so much.
Hey,
everything
hey,
good
hey.
Today? You're feeling a little optimistic, huh? What's going on?
I would say I'm bordering on exuberance.
Wow.
I'm just happy. You know, actually, good. I think I do know why. My friend who's been locked in Wisconsin this whole time,
right,
who I've been keeping touch with, he's kind of my touch point guy. You know, he calls me, I call him, how you doing through all this? Well, he came over last night. He was in town to see his parents, hadn't seen them since Thanksgiving. And we had a great chat, great night, had a real
excellent.
Good time. Yeah, I'm fired up about life. Yeah, how about you?
Good to hear that. Yep, we need that contact every now and then. It's got to happen. And without it, with those people that really mean something, it gets tough to handle. So keep reaching out. That's really cool.
Absolutely. It was nice to just, you know, get confirmation that the people outside the house aren't just in my head. You know what I mean? They're actually out there.
Yes, exactly. Now, you didn't let him into the lower level.
He was all around this whole entire facility.
Wow.
Yes, I gave him the full tour, the platinum tour.
That's awesome. That is awesome. Man, we've got some good conversations that are going to be happening today. Number one, we've got Ken Ferry back on. I know that he's out in the field this morning. At least his plan was to be in the field this morning, but we'll get him to take a quick break for us so that we can get an update on what's going on in central Illinois. And, you know, already some of those lessons that we learned in a really wet 2019, we may have to lean on some of those again because of some wet conditions out there. I want to find out what Ken's thinking as far as that goes. And then on the Farmer Forum, you know, Ben from Iowa, Glenn from Ohio, good grief. This is going to be a lot of fun today.
Yep.
Really
be a good one.
Looking forward to it. Yep, absolutely. All right, let's get to the news. What do you got?
Well, Chip, President Donald Trump says before the end of the week, he will unveil what he called, quote, very interesting action against China. The president said he is looking at a bill that would require his administration to sanction Chinese government officials responsible for human rights abuses. The House is set to give final passage of the measure today. China has threatened to retaliate if the United States attempts to pressure China over perceived human rights abuses. This, as protests in Hong Kong over China's proposed tighter grip on that region begins again. Chip.
Yeah, if President Trump is calling it very interesting action against China, I'm sure that has piqued the interest of the leaders in China, and they are preparing for retaliation as we speak. There's just no question about it. And you combine that with the comment from over the weekend about how we should give up on the dream of changing China.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
This is going south in a hurry. It sure feels that way.
Well, in a related note, White House economic advisor Larry Kudlow said the phase one trade deal is intact for the moment, but also noted the president is more concerned with investigating China's handling of the coronavirus.
Yeah, Kudlow's miffed.
miffed is the word being tossed around.
Yeah, exactly.
Some Senate Republicans are beginning to talk about another round of coronavirus-related stimulus. Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said the Senate version would have a more narrow scope than the $3 trillion-plus measure brought forward by the House. McConnell estimated the timeline around a few weeks, saying, quote, we need to make sure we have unemployment insurance properly funded for as long as we need. GOP lawmakers, Chip, remain cautious, however, about rushing to produce another stimulus package. And I think that's wise. That's what Senator Grassley had talked about before previously on the show, and they're maintaining that. I like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I love how he describes it as a more narrow scope.
Yeah.
So, in other words, some of the wish list stuff is going to have to come out of that bill.
Definitely. Well, the Coronavirus Food Assistance Program, or CFAP, is off to a rocky start as changes and varying interpretations filter through the already complicated aid package. Confusion abounds as to what qualifies for coverage, including wording that refers to inventory subject to price risk as of Jan 15. And Chip, we saw this coming when they unveiled the details of it, and now that they're implementing, it's gotten no more simple, has it?
No, it really, well, it, in some cases it has, Davis.
Okay.
And we have gotten answers that we were looking for, but we anticipated a lot of the questions that would be asked, and we missed so many.
Yeah,
because there's so many more questions that are being asked about. Well, now wait a second, what about? And there's still confusion out there.
Yep. This one I don't know about, Chip, but I'm going to throw it out there. The Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine has submitted a petition to USDA's Food Safety and Inspection Service requesting that the agency require meat and poultry processing establishments test their products for the presence of coronavirus. That's the virus that causes COVID-19, of course, and they want them to make the results available to the public. PCRM is also calling on USDA to notify the public of potential presence of COVID-19 on meat and poultry products. I don't know. This is the first time hearing of this.
Right.
I don't know what to make of it.
The first time I saw it was in Pro Farmer's First Thing Today this morning. Yep. And, on one hand, I'm like, what do they know? Right. Is the virus transmissible this way? On the other hand, I'm thinking, wait a second, this is the way to prove that it doesn't transmit on food products like that.
I like that a lot better then.
Yeah.
Very good.
All right. Thank you, Davis.
Absolutely.
All right. Let's bring in Margie Yuckelkamp, editor of Ag Professional. How you doing this morning, Margie?
Doing pretty well, Chip.
Good, good, good. Okay. You are an employer. You've got to have a plan on how you're going to respond to stuff like COVID in the future now, right?
You know, I was able to tune into a webinar with an attorney, Eric Cohn, who focuses on OSHA enforcement. And he provided some wonderful takeaways and real basic practical takeaways, right? And maybe there's three reasons why every employer, he says, should have a COVID-19 response plan. And one is employees are scared. They're showing concern. Yep. This having a written plan helps alleviate that. It helps with your dealings with OSHA. OSHA is using the general duty clause as an enforcement tool. Many OSHA guidelines are parallel to those that are provided by the CDC. And he also thought that we are on the verge of seeing a tidal wave of litigation. So having a written exposure control and response plan can help with that. And really practical for ag retailers, you know, this is a similar approach to having a lockout, tagout, or emergency action plan. We have a story online that gives some 3-8 details that should be part of every written response plan. And we also go into how the CDC is outlining the criterion for those cloth face coverings.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Good stuff. Good stuff, Margie. You know, and I tell you, the risk of litigation that we face going forward is something that a lot of the ag retailers have got in mind, because when you stop into those shops, there's some pretty strict social distancing still being enforced in there.
We are seeing that, and we're also seeing that folks are wanting to get back to work and keep their employees safe and help them feel confident.
Absolutely, Margie. Good stuff. Thank you so much. Appreciate everything you're doing.
Thanks, Chip.
All right, that's Margie Yuckelkamp, editor of Ag Professional. Coming up next, we got Ken Ferry, Crop Tech Consulting, up next on AgriTalk. Everyone talks big yields, but Channel Seedsmen deliver advice that yields results. Every season, Channel Seedsmen match elite seed products with unmatched service and support to push the performance of every acre. That's why you can count on Channel for what you need to make the most of your season. You don't have to be a Channel customer to take advantage of this support. Visit channel.com/agritalk to sign up and receive expert advice that yields.
We've cleared the schedule for you. Give us a call at 855-482-5524 and join the conversation.
You know what else they can do, Davis?
Yeah? What's that?
They can also tweet at us.
Oh, they
and
can.
When you do, make sure that you include hashtag AgriTalk in the message. That way I'll be sure to see it during the show. All right. And you know what? If you've got a topic that you want us to talk about on the show, host@agritalk.com is the email.
Ooh.
Feel free. Send me an email. host@agritalk.com. All right. Ken Ferry is a Farm Journal agronomist. He's with Crop Tech Consulting, and he joins us right now. Ken, it's good to talk with you again. What you up to, man?
We're planting corn, Chip.
Still planting corn. Isn't it a little late for you guys? It's May 27th. What you been doing?
Yeah, we got a little corn to plant, we got a little beans to plant, and we got a little both to replant. So it's going to be a busy time, I think, if we can get it dried out.
Okay, so what is the – you guys have been – I'm a little surprised to hear that you're in the field. You must have been dodging raindrops for the last few days, haven't you, Ken?
You know, it's crazy. The field we're in today planting is this borderline, but with technology we can plant it, and one we planted last night, though. Almost midnight was about perfect, but in between there's only 3 miles and you can't plant anything between those two fields because of the showers. So it's a pick and choose by the mile as we move across the countryside where water's standing and planters are running.
Yeah, watching the radar the past couple of days in the afternoon has been pretty fascinating to me. You talk about popcorn showers or pop-up thunderstorms. Man, they're all over the place. With technology, you can plant the field that you're in right now. You said, what kind of technology are you talking about?
Well, you know, one of your biggest challenges is to come out here and plant these fields that are marginal so you don't, for instance, carry too much downforce on the planter unit and smear your sidewalls and stuff. Today, we have air-controlled row cleaners. We have hydraulic lift on the row unit, so all day yesterday and definitely this morning as we're planting, we're carrying almost 100 pounds up hydraulic downforce on these units to keep them light enough to allow us to plant the field. That's stuff you just couldn't do 5 years ago. You know, you'd either had to wait for this field or you'd put it in tougher conditions.
Right. So, yeah, you know, we always talk about, and you're the one that taught me this years ago, the sins of the springs tend to show up in the fall when we're harvesting. But we're reducing the risk with management and technology of committing a few sins in the spring, aren't we?
Yes, we have. And you know, technology's allowed us a wider window to get that done, I guess. And it's definitely allowing us more acres per day. So that can be a plus or minus, but in seasons like this, it's usually a plus, meaning that, you know, you can couple everything from the auto steers to the high speed to the technology on the planter, and you just flat out can put more acres in the ground in a day's time.
Right. Okay, you mentioned that there's water standing in some of those fields over there in the Eastern Corn Belt. Well, and you know, it's not just the Eastern Corn Belt anymore, Ken. Southern Iowa has gotten pretty damp. Southwest Iowa in particular after yesterday's rains. If those guys have got water standing in fields, gosh, what do you tell them right now? What do they need to do?
Well, it's a mixed bag, right? As far as we're definitely here in Illinois anyway, we're quite a bit ahead of last year in acres planted, especially in corn acres. We just, you know, last year we had 2 days pushing four in April and about 4 days in May, and the rest of it came in June. This year we've got a lot of crop planted. Unfortunately, we probably can't say that we're better off when it comes to yield because we've got a lot of rough stands that went underwater after they got planted. So early water in cold soils, believe it or not, a lot of that crop survived. This last go around in warm soils, I've seen fields in as short as 48 hours not survive it. You know, it was just too warm a soil and too much water. So there's the ground that is planted, we got to go back and decide if we're going to be patching those in or not. And here we're going to have to patch quite a few of those ponds back in. Last year, when we planted in June, it came up and it was off and running.
Right.
We didn't have to worry about the ponds.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Okay. So when you're doing those stand evaluations out there, Ken, what are you looking at? What are some of the thresholds that you're thinking about?
Well, the main thing, Chip, is stand evaluation. So, going out there and actually getting numbers and putting them on paper for each field, each hybrid, and each zone that you think's in trouble. So when you make a decision on whether you're going to leave it or whether you're going to replant it, you have solid numbers to work off of. And sometimes if you just let emotion run it, you can make the wrong mistake. So when guys call in and they say, hey, my stand's really bad in this field, I think I'm going to replant it, I'm going to be asking, what do you think your emergence core is and what do you think your ear count is? If they say, well, it's bad, that's a pretty good indicator they haven't counted. So go back and give me actual numbers, and give me a lot of them. And then we can make that decision. And the decision changes, right? So if this was May 1st, I can tell you, Chip, we'd be tearing a lot of corn up. Corn is what's taking the beating the hardest compared to our beans. But it's May 27th. So you make that decision a little bit different now because there's no guarantee the replant's going to have as good a stand as you got. And you've given up a lot of valuable time. So that has to be factored in. And with corn, you want to go off of ear count. So just because you have 29,000 plants up, if only 18 of them are two-collar plants and the rest are just breaking through, you can't count those late emergers. They're weeds out there. So I want these guys to make sure they're making realistic decisions off of expected ear count. Sure, we planted in June last year, but we had a lot of 34,000 ear counts that went with it. Planted in April this year and settling. I've been in some of these fields where we may have to settle for 17 to 18,000 ear count. That's tough. It's hard to build a big yield on something like that.
Okay, Ken, you got to get a little more specific on this, I think. At least you do for me. Because at this time of the year, when that crop, I mean, are you talking about the difference between a spike and a two leaf on those corn plants?
Right. So we gauge a corn plant by collars. So the plumule leaf is that first leaf and it's rounded. When you can see a collar at the base of that leaf, it's a V1 plant. Yeah. It takes about another 90 heat units and you'll get another collar on the next one and that's a V2 plant. Anything that's within one collar of the neighboring plant, we can count that as a potential ear.
Okay.
Anything that's more than one collar, you count it as a half an ear, and anything that's two collars or more, it's zero.
Okay.
So if you have a spike sitting there next to a almost two-collar plant, that spike is not going to produce a harvestable ear.
Okay. Well, I've seen that a million times out on crop tour and in other fields doing some evaluation where that weed growing next to it, it was just too late to the party out there. Okay. Go ahead.
And you got to be in the field driving down the road. 22,000 looks like a good stand. You got to get out there, stretch a tape. I push my guys, go ahead and set flags next to them if you don't believe it. And then watch that plant evolve through the year and you'll get a handle on why you got to be realistic of what's going to make an ear and what's not.
Okay. All right. Interesting. Okay. So I didn't think that guys would have to be revisiting 2019 so soon. The lessons that we learned last year, and it's not the right question. I'm not asking the right question because it's all about planning date and evaluating that stand versus a year ago, it just got planted late and took off. So no, it's a bad question. I'm not going to ask it. Scratch it, Ken. Go over to soybeans. What do we need to evaluate in soybeans right now?
Well, soybeans is a lot more forgiving, right? And we can drive those populations a lot lower and still survive from a yield perspective. So you're definitely more cautious there. A lot of times in soybeans, it'll be an issue of can you manage the weed control more than worrying about loss of stand to loss of yield, okay? So when we start seeing soybean stands get down in that 60,000 range, you're still not giving up much, if any, in yield, depending on when they're planted, but you are starting to approach an area where somebody's got to stay on top of the weed control.
Right.
So you start making decisions there as far as is it a non-GMO package or what? What are your options? How heavy is the weed pressure? And we're replanting beans too between the freeze and everything else. But soybean stands, we can thicken them up a little bit for weed control. Doesn't improve the yield though. Where corn, you just can't thicken it up. You either got to live with it or tear it out. You try to thicken up a corn stand, and you're going to take a beating.
Right.
Soybeans.
Yeah, all you're doing is planting weeds at that point.
Yeah. And now it's different if the pollen's gone and it's 100% kill, but trying to take a 14,000 corn stand back to 34 is a disaster usually.
Gotcha. So, fascinating stuff, Ken. Yep, fascinating stuff. Stay at it. We'll get back in contact with you and get an update again here before too long. Thanks, buddy.
You bet. Stay safe.
All right, Ken Ferry, Crop Tech Consulting, also the Farm Journal agronomist. We're going to get this farmer forum going when we come back. We got Glenn from Ohio and Ben from Iowa up next.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And joining us now is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Brian, yesterday the optimism was really pretty consistent across the markets. Maybe not as consistent today, right?
Not quite as consistent, Chip. We are seeing a little bit of strength in the corn market, a little bit in the soybeans as well. Kind of a mixed tone in the wheat market so far this morning. On the corn, it's just sideways. I mean, there's nothing else to say there. It's been that way for over a month now and just continues to be the case. So a little bit forward, a little bit backwards, and really we're going nowhere there. Funds maintaining a hefty short position. Soybeans, like I said, just about a penny higher here this morning, and trying to find something positive. We had the positive news yesterday with the sales to China. Trying to follow it up a little bit today.
Gotcha. Yeah, July corn has become look, it's at 320 again. Kind of trading affair in here. It's not moving too far away from it. Livestock side, hogs showing some strength today.
Yeah, really, yesterday we put in a good strong performance on corrected buying and following that up today. So now when you look at the daily charts, they look like lows are in place off the pullback over the past several weeks. And now the challenge is how far to the upside can we push this thing? But for now, the technicals are working and we are improving on that posture in the marketplace.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've got some prices going to the upside in live cattle and in feeder cattle again today, too. So we do have that optimism, and stocks are kind of trading all over the place. Dow's up about 100 points right now. Thank you, Brian. That is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me.
Yep.
Really, really good information there from Ken Ferry going out and
Ken's
doing
the
stand evaluations.
Yeah, he's got his thinking cap on this morning. That's awesome.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. Yeah, it's almost like he's done this stuff before.
Once or twice.
Well, yeah, exactly. All right. Hey, everyone, the Farmer Forum is sponsored by America's Conservation Movement. America's Conservation Ag Movement is a national partnership designed to help all U.S. farmers more rapidly scale the adoption in conservation agriculture and its economic and environmental benefits to farmers and their communities. To learn more about the movement and their partners, visit www.agweb.com/ACAM. Let's get it started. Glenn, over in Ohio, Glenn Newcomer is coming on the show. How you doing, Glenn? It's good to talk with you.
Hey, good. Nice to visit with you again, Chip. I'm doing great. How's your day going?
Doing just dandy. Glenn, you got to tell us about your operation. You're one. It's the first time that we've had you on the Farmer Forum, so let's introduce you to everybody.
Yeah, well, thank you for the invitation. It's an honor to be part of this. We farm over here in the very northwest corner of Ohio, just south of Interstate 80, and I'm about 10-15 miles from the Indiana line. So we're in the very northwest corner of the state, and I'm a fifth-generation farmer. Our son, Jason, joined a few years back, so I guess we're in our sixth generation on the homestead here. And we have a diversified operation that we grow corn, soybeans, seed beans for Pioneer. And we have a crop insurance agency, a Pioneer seed agency, and So we're somewhat diversified here in the northwest corner of the state.
You know, and there in the northwest corner of Ohio, I mean, the weather is about as unpredictable as it comes, for at least from my perspective, Glenn. And it's got to have something to do with the lake influence. But in reality, as northwest Ohio goes, so goes the state of Ohio, right?
Well, when you look at the number of tillable acres, a large percentage of those tillable acres are in the northern half of the state. And the diversity and the type of soils that, because we're in the lake bed soils off of Lake Erie, and we're in the Lake Erie watershed, there's a lot of challenges in managing the different types of soils throughout our region.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. No doubt. All right. Let's bring in Ben Renchi over here in eastern Iowa. Ben, my friend, it's good to talk with you again. How are you today?
Good to be back, Chip. Great. Yep. Great day back in the fields here. I was listening to Ken Ferry, and I think he just described my last two planting seasons. And we're off to a much different start, much more promising start here in northeast Iowa this year.
Well, I'm surprised to hear that you're in the field, though, Ben. I mean, we talked about dodging the showers with Ken. You've been dodging them too, haven't you?
Yeah, you know, it's been dry here, Chip. I mean, we are just locally dry, so – but. For us, it's a story of heat units. We're about a week behind. It's been cool and dry, plant in the dust, benzo bust sort of start. I don't know if there's a technified word for this, for soil heat units, but we put our crops in early, and it's just been cold, and the seed's been laying there. We haven't really lost any stands, but most of our corn's V2, V3, beans V1, unifolia, they're out. And we're starting post-emerge spraying and in-season nitrogen application.
All right. All right. What's your current situation over there, Glenn? It was kind of a varied start over in the far eastern belt, wasn't it?
Yeah, but I guess when we compared 2020 with 2019, it's just been an absolute totally different year. Last year, we had a tremendous amount of prevent plant in our area. In our own farm, we only got 20% planted that last year. So this year, obviously, we were highly motivated, wanting to get the crop in the ground. And as luck would have it, we had a perfect planting season this year. We were able to start planting on April the 24th. We put everything in the ground, and we finished on May the 5th. We were able to do some custom work for some other people even after that. And, but just as Ben just said, the cold conditions is really what the curveball was this year. Last year, where we had flooding rains and warm temperatures, the things wouldn't dry out. This year, we had cold and dry. And I guess both of them create their own unique set of agronomic challenges. But right now, I'd rather take the dry and cold than the warm and wet. And everything started good, but recently we had the heavy flooding rains that came through last week. And now that's creating some different challenges on some of the clay-based soils in the area. And so, you know, spring's going on. There's side dressing starting to occur. There's some really tough decisions that are being made in regards to crop insurance claims, replant. It's all going to depend on the rain what we get in the next couple of days.
All right. All right. So these decisions that you're making on replant, how widespread is the concern, Glenn?
Well, you know, last week we had 4 to 6 inches of heavy flooding rain. And I don't care what kind of soil type it is. When you get that kind of an onslaught of rain, it's going to take any type of soil and turn it into concrete. And when you start, depending on when the crop was planted, what stage it was as far as being emerged, some crops, fields handled it very well. Other ones, right now there's a crust out there that is just not letting that emerge be finished. And we were out scouting fields yesterday for customers and clients and even our own fields, and right now we're seeing, you know, two-thirds of a stand, just like Ken was talking about earlier here. When you realistically go out and look at the uniformity of the stands that are in some of the fields, it's just not there. And so we either have to get the rest of that crop up very, very soon, or we have some replant decisions to make. But overall, everything got planted very timely, and we're off to a great start.
Yeah. Ben, I've not been out in any fields doing any stand counts in eastern Iowa, but boy, and I shouldn't even say this because Ken just said you can't do it, but driving around looking at stuff, it looks pretty darn good in eastern Iowa.
Yeah, we've got great potential here locally.
Okay.
We did have a very cold event that some of the earliest planted corn maybe took a little freeze off the top. There really weren't too many beans out of the ground to get damaged
right.
by it. I'm not saying nobody got hurt, but it was early enough. Most stands hadn't fully emerged. I think what I'm seeing more in the field, though, is I thought that we were going to see a tsunami of corn acres in our area. My seed dealers told me early on that everybody was switching with, you know, we're corn all the time everywhere. And by the end of the season, you know, my informal straw poll of the folks that I get supplied by say that it pretty much switched back to just even Steven normal.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Wow. Any changes that took place in the crop mix had to be driven by profitability. And Ben, this was a year that was supposed to be a recovery year on revenues in a lot of ways. And then we just get sideswiped by the COVID and the loss of an ethanol market in our area that is so important. What is the profit outlook, the revenue potential for 2020 now compared to what it was just a few weeks ago?
Yeah, well, the profit scenario you're describing is still at 20,000 leagues beneath the sea. I mean, if you feel profitable at these prices, I want to congratulate you on sticking out the season on your farm all-age planting with your 40-year-old paid-for planter. But I don't see how anybody who's investing in the future right now, embracing some of the newer technology, keeping up a fleet of equipment, a young farmer that's trying to put a land base together, buying out, you know, the young farmer or even intermediate career farmer who's trying to, you know, take out the elder generation. I don't see you're nowhere close to profitable.
Right.
The only way you
right.
could be profitable is to be all equity, very modest line of equipment. And there's certainly producers who farm that
sure.
way. And my hat's off to them. It's the right strategy now. But, man, if you are a young guy trying to let
yep.
grandpa and grandma retire, take over the home place, man, this is rain on the scarecrow ground for you.
Yeah, yeah, it certainly is. And Glenn, the CFAP program, the payments that we started to sign up for yesterday, for some it's going to be a great help. For others, it's there's just not much meat on that bone for the row crop guy, is there?
That's correct, Chip. I think, again, it depends on the area of the country that you're sitting in and your own individual operation. I think if you're a livestock person, there's value there. But yeah. in our scenario, for example, in our area where we had a tremendous amount of prevent plant last year,
yeah.
we're not really going to benefit from that because what we really already did have produced, we had contracts that we had to get filled, and so we filled those first. And when you look at where the prices were at the beginning of the year, most people that came off a heavy prevent plant year last year needed that revenue for cash flow purposes. And most of the producers in our area that were strongly advised to sign up for the ARC-IC program for payments there. So those payments are going to be much more significant than what the CFAP payments are going to be. And, you know, I guess the frustrating thing that I hear from some producers is that when you start looking at this program, it's benefiting the producer that did nothing. And, you know, you look at the managers that are trying to, you know, utilize all of the marketing tools, working the, you know, the carry in the market with their grain bins and maybe locking basis in or early because there's been a huge change in that ethanol market, as was alluded
yep.
to just a few minutes ago.
Yep.
All those things that we are encouraged to do, those people aren't being rewarded. And the person that just put it in the bin and stored it and didn't market it, they're getting rewarded for that. And so
yep.
I struggle with that a little bit.
I understand. Glenn, boy, that is the number one issue that a lot of guys are dealing with when it comes to this CFAP program and how the payments are calculated. All right, we've got Ben from Iowa, Glenn from Ohio. We're going to unveil some important news coming up in the next segment of AgriTalk.
AgriTalk is brought to you by America's Conservation Ag Movement, a national partnership to help farmers scale conservation for their businesses, the environment, and their communities. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM. When news breaks, the newsmakers talk about it on AgriTalk with Chip Flory.
Welcome back to AgriTalk and the Farmer Forum, which is sponsored by America's Conservation Ag Movement. The foundation partners in the program include Trust in Food, the Farm Journal Foundation, USDA's NRCS, America's Farmland Trust, Corteva, Ducks Unlimited, National Corn Growers Association, the National Pork Board, Sanderson Farms, Syngenta, the Nature Conservancy, and Valen. Thank you so much for sponsoring AgriTalk and the Farmer Forum. All right, let's get back to it. Ben Renchie from Iowa, Glenn Newcomer from Ohio. Ben, the conversation that we had there at the end of the last segment about the CFAP program, and we were talking about revenue, and when you were mentioning revenue, Ben, you didn't even get to the CFAP program. Does it provide much relief?
Well, I think you couldn't have expressed it better than Glenn, who it really brings relief to. You know, for me, it's going to play out okay. We had quite a bit of grain in storage, and the way the rules are construed, we'll be able to make a claim. But it's kind of like how do you eat an elephant, you know, one bite at a time. Every little bit helps. You know, it's not going to change our game this year, that's for sure. I think I'll take it and buy everybody who works at our farm, I will buy them a tank of ethanol, and maybe that'll help more.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no question about that. Boy, Ben, we've got to be doing everything that we can right now to support those ethanol guys, right?
We sure do. I mean, you know, what are we actually sure of, Chip? You know, 120 days ago, you know, we were pretty sure that cows flatulating was the number one source of industrial pollution, you know, and then we shut off the planes, trains, and automobiles, and all of a sudden the skies cleared, you know, so I don't know what I'm sure of, but I am sure that, you know, we made a great case for cleaner energy here in the last couple months.
Yes. Yeah, boy, there is a lot of truth to that. And even before this took off, we were talking about how we promote ethanol production and consumption going forward. I've been making the case for a while that we need to get back on the environmental side of things and talk about that cleaner burning fuel and how it does benefit us. So, Glenn, ethanol is – how much of a market – or how much of an influence does ethanol production have on your market over there in the Eastern Belt?
Well, it has a tremendous impact. We're in an area of the country, actually, if you look at the amount of livestock that's produced throughout northwest Ohio, lower Michigan, there's a huge expansion of livestock, and we have a pullet ethanol plant nearby that we predominantly haul most of our corn to, but between the livestock demand and the ethanol demand, we are in an area that we're in a corn deficit area. I know that's difficult or hard to believe maybe for people in the Western Corn Belt, but we're in a part of the country here that corn makes money for us because of the strong basis that we have the luxury of enjoying. And our ethanol plant locally here, basically, it's just almost non-existent now, the amount of corn that's being run through the plant now. And so, you know, at the beginning of the year, our basis was 55 cents over for corn. And where the prices were at that time, there was a lot of high-dollar corn being squeezed into ethanol. Well, now they're bidding 15 to 25 cents under, depending on the month. So, you know, we've seen a 70-cent change in the price of a bushel of corn. And on 200 bushel of corn, that's $140 an acre. You know, a couple thousand acres, that now you're talking a big chunk of change. And so just the basis impact, forget the, you know, the futures reduction that we've seen, but just the basis alone, that demand has really gone away and it's really impacted our prices. And it's very concerning to us what's in store for the future.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, we're going to talk with Jeff Cooper about some of the future of ethanol in the country here on tomorrow's AgriTalk. So looking forward to that. Okay, another thing that I'm looking forward to, one thing that we haven't been taking the planes, trains, and automobiles to, Ben, is farm meetings as we practice the social distancing and the stay-at-home orders because of COVID-19. But we've got an answer for that at Farm Journal. Introducing the Farm Journal Field Days. It's going to be August 25th through the 27th. coverage is going to continue beyond that, but we're going to kick it off August 25th through the 27th. And Ben, I think I'm going to be over at Blue Diamond Farming Company in Jessup, Iowa to see the Renchi family on that day. I'm looking forward to that, buddy.
Oh, absolutely, Chip. I mean, for anybody who wants to see farming in the worst way, come to my place, and anybody who wants to see it in the best way, go 2 days later to Glenn.
That's right. We're going to do this field days are going to be taking place from the Central Corn Belt over to the Eastern Corn Belt. I'm going to be at Ben's on August 25th, and then we're going to move over to Glenn's on August 27th. And it's like a virtual pavilion that we're going to be working at with some field demonstrations and everything. Glenn, it sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun.
You know, it is going to be a lot of fun. I know I'm not part of the whole planning process, but I get to have the pleasure and the honor of hosting. But I know that they plan to have about 100 VIP guests invited to attend, and it's going to be exciting to see what all they have in develop for this get together. But the way it's been described to me, it's a whole new format of delivering information to a key audience of producers.
Right. Right. Ben, this is like the old days on the crop tour. Remember when we'd get to Worthington and there was the group that was sitting on the other side of the folding wall listening in on our conversation?
Absolutely. You know, that it's almost Abraham Lincoln-esque, you know, listening to the courthouse floor, you know. But, you know, I get my best ideas from my peers. And I'm excited, a chance to bring at least 100 peers together with some great vendors and suppliers and get a new set of ideas.
Yeah, and then it's going to be a lot of fun. And then people will be able to sit in on the conversation virtually. And we're not going to let the learning stop, I think is the bottom line there. And we're not going to let COVID-19 stop us from having these field days that give us so much information. Glenn, thank you so much for the conversation today, buddy. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you, Chip.
You bet. Ben Renchi, I'll talk to you really soon as well.
Thank you, Chip.
You bet. All right. Ben in Iowa, Glenn over in Ohio. Thank you for listening this morning. Come back this afternoon. Rich Nelson from Allendale. Tomorrow morning, we got Brad Coyma and Jeff Cooper.